Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. We're going to start today with several articles on the state of the economy, both domestic and worldwide. And the first is an answer to a question about which many people have speculated. This article is from Fortune magazine. It's by Paolo Canfino. It's dated July 1st. Here's the title of the article. Jerome Powell says the Fed would have lowered rates if it weren't for tariffs. Were it not for tariffs, the Federal Reserve would have already cut interest rates in 2025, Chair Jerome Powell said on Tuesday at a conference of central bankers. During an on-stage interview at the European Central Bank Forum, alongside the central bankers of England, Korea, Japan, and the European Union, Powell was asked if the uncertainty caused by the White House's ongoing tariff regime had led the Fed to hold off on cutting interest rates. He responded, "I do think that." Since then, the Fed has sat pat on making any decisions about interest rates. "We went on hold when we saw the size of the tariffs and where, and essentially all inflation forecasts for the United States went up materially as a consequence of the tariffs," Powell said. "So we didn't overreact. In fact, we didn't react at all." The Fed had closed 2024 with a series of interest rate cuts. However, it had paused that rate-cutting cycle at the start of the year. Since then, at each FOMC meeting, Powell has reiterated the view that with the economic outlook so uncertain, the Fed would wait to see what happened before lowering rates. The rampant uncertainty, which affected all market participants, not just the Fed, started when President Donald Trump announced his widespread and harsh tariff policy in early April. The new policy led to a stock market crash, caused bond yields to soar, and saw the dollar weakened. It also forced businesses into a holding pattern for any future investment plans, which risked exacerbating a recession. "We think the prudent thing to do is to wait and learn more and to see what those effects might be," Powell said. "And again, they haven't really shown up. So for now, we're waiting." Powell's comments point to a certain irony in the current situation of the United States economy. The pause in interest rate cuts was due to heightened levels of uncertainty stemming from Trump's tariff policy. At the same time, Trump is furious with Powell for not lowering interest rates. On Monday, the president renewed his attacks on Powell, posting a picture of a handwritten note that accused him of taking too long to lower rates. At the ECB forum, Powell again declined to answer any questions about Trump's comments, his typical response whenever asked. A White House spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Now we're going to talk specifically about the economic numbers for the month of May in an article from Fortune magazine by Irina Ivanova. Title of the article is, "Consumers saw a double whammy of bad news in May, pulling back on spending as inflation heated up." For the first time this year, consumers pulled back on spending as the bad mood that's been persuasive since tariffs hit caught up with retail data. Overall spending in May fell 0.1% from the prior month, and incomes fell 0.4%, the Commerce Department reported on Friday. Coming on the heels of a report that first quarter GDP shrank more than expected, the data showed a rapidly downshifting economy. "Personal consumption expenditures are weak and continue to weaken," Eugenio Ailman, chief economist at Raymond James, told Fortune. "We knew that consumer demand has been on the weak side, but yesterday we had the revision to the first quarter GDP, which reaffirmed that consumption wasn't that strong. Today's number just confirmed that this wasn't a one-off." Both spending and income figures were distorted by one-time changes. Spending on cars plunged, pulling down overall spending. Because Americans had moved more quickly to buy vehicles in the spring to get ahead of the tariffs. But spending on airfares, meals, and hotels all fell last month, signs of underlying consumer pressure rather than mere timing shifts. Spending on services overall rose just 0.1% in May, the lowest one-month increase in 4.5 years. Because consumers are not in a strong enough shape to handle those higher prices, they're spending less on recreation, travel, hotels, that type of thing, said Luke Tilley, chief economist at Wilmington Trust. Retail sales also dropped sharply last month, contracting 0.9%, according to a separate report released last week. Incomes also dropped after a one-time adjustment to Social Security benefits boosted payments in March and April, allowing some retirees who had worked for state and local governments to get higher Social Security payments. Inflation heated up modestly, with prices rising at 2.3% annual rate in May, compared with 2.1% in April. Core prices, which exclude volatile food and energy costs, increased 2.7% from a year earlier, up from April's 2.6% rate. In the first 3 months of this year, consumer spending rose just 0.5% and has been sluggish in the first 2 months of the second quarter. Most economists think May's figures signal a dramatic downshift to come. The U.S. economy is poised for a summer slowdown, EY economist wrote. Both consumer spending and business investment are expected to decelerate significantly. In recent years, consumers have been able to keep spending more thanks to real income growth and a boost to some government benefits. But these two supports have now mostly faded, and the real income picture is about to deteriorate rapidly as tariffs drive up prices, an economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics said. With personal savings low and consumers too skittish to borrow, consumption is likely to borrow slow much further, and soon, they said. Real incomes are set to flatten this year, due partly to a weaker job market, but also because prices are rising, they wrote. At the same time, the rate of inflation, 2.7% annually, is significantly higher than the Federal Reserve's 2% target, making it unlikely that rate cuts are coming anytime soon. With so many uncertainties still lingering, the Fed will likely hold off on rate cuts for the time being, National Financial Markets economist Oren Klatchkin said. Here's our final State of the Economy article for the afternoon, again from Fortune magazine, this one by Jason Ma. Title of the article is "This Summer Will Be Decisive for the Economy and for Wall Street." If you followed the seasonal investing advice of sell in May and go away, you may want to reconsider, because the outlook for the economy and financial markets will likely be determined in the coming months. Several major events, data sets, progress reports, and deals are due this summer. By fall, the impact of Donald Trump's tariffs and fiscal policy should be clearer, giving the Federal Reserve enough confidence to act on interest rates. Here's a look at the factors that will tip the scale. The first is the One Big Beautiful Bill, a key piece that could come as soon as this week. Trump has set a July 4th deadline for Congress to pass his so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, which contains his tax cuts and spending priorities. While the House of Representatives passed one version of the legislation, and the Senate advanced a separate one, the GOP's narrow majorities in both chambers make the timing of the eventual package and its exact provisions less certain. All the congressional log rolling that's needed could push the timeline past July 4th, especially now that a few Republicans have announced they will not seek re-election, making them less susceptible to Trump's arm twisting. Wall Street expects the tax cuts to juice the economy and the stock market, while the bond market will watch the bill's impacts on U.S. debt. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated the Senate's version of the bill will add nearly $3.3 trillion to deficits over a decade. More fiscal sticker shock could send Treasury yields higher and add more pressure on the dollar, which is already down 10% this year, its worst first-half performance in more than 50 years. Secondly, the debt ceiling. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has estimated that the U.S. will no longer be able to pay its bills by mid to late summer unless the debt ceiling is raised. While he's vowed that the U.S. will never default, it's up to Congress to raise the debt limit so that the Treasury Department can issue fresh bonds to service interest expenses and maturities. The big, beautiful bill would increase the debt ceiling by trillions of dollars. In the meantime, the Treasury Department has been using its extraordinary cash management measures to avoid default. Bessent said last week he extended his department's authority to use those extraordinary measures to July 24th in an apparent reminder for Congress to raise the debt ceiling before its typical August recess. Failure to raise the debt limit and prevent a U.S. default could spark a global financial meltdown. Trump administration officials have been saying since Liberation Day in April that major trade deals are imminent. So far, the U.S. has reached agreements with the U.K. and China, while negotiations with other top trade partners continue. Meanwhile, the 90-day pause on Trump's reciprocal tariffs will expire on July 9th, after which they would spike back to levels triggered, which triggered an epic stock market sell-off. Bessent has signaled flexibility on that deadline, saying a dozen or so trade deals could be reached by Labor Day. But over the weekend, Trump reiterated his desire to dispense with any further talks and unilaterally set a tariff rate on each country. A sudden return to high tariffs would deliver another jolt to Wall Street, which had been expecting duties to eventually settle at 10% for most countries and 30% for China, manageable levels that could largely be absorbed without too much pain. The next major factor is the Fed and whether they cut rates or not. Tariffs and their impact on inflation will heavily influence the central bank as it weighs whether to trim interest rates. Pricing data so far hasn't revealed a big impact from tariffs, and a few federal officials have said there's evidence that inflation is tame enough to justify rate cuts. But Fed Chairman Jerome Powell and other policymakers have indicated that they need at least a few more months of data to be confident that inflation is indeed on the right track. If the upcoming data show that any tariff-related inflation effects are only one-offs that aren't raising consumers' inflation expectations over the longer run, then rate cuts could come in the fall. While Trump has demanded that the Fed lower rates immediately, he could also make it hard for policymakers to do that. They may be more reluctant to cut just to prove markets that they're independent from political pressure. Re-escalation of tariffs could muddy the inflation picture. The naming of a shadow Fed chair could even stir a revolt on the Federal Open Market Committee. And of course, there are the effect of corporate earnings. Starting in July, earnings reports for the second quarter will start coming out, giving Wall Street a more fulsome view of how tariffs and the economic uncertainty they've caused are affecting profits as well as the outlook for profits. Because companies rushed to stock up on imports earlier in the year and to get ahead of tariffs, first quarter results didn't fully reflect higher rates. But those stockpiles are being exhausted, forcing companies to hike prices on consumers or eat tariff costs and shrink profit margins. Also factoring into earnings will be how much or how little companies plan to invest and hire in an economy that is slowing among Trump's trade war. The White House's fiscal policies will sway earnings too, as tax cuts, the end of certain tax credits, more spending on defense, and less spending on the social safety net ripple through corporate America and consumers. And finally, the wild card, the Middle East. A tenuous ceasefire has taken hold between Israel, Iran, and the United States, sending oil prices lower as markets worry about a sudden supply disruption. But Trump has said he's open to bombing Iran again if it's necessary to cripple Tehran's nuclear program. That's as conflicting reports emerge over how much Iran's capabilities have actually been damaged. Renewed fighting could set off another surge in crude prices, sapping consumers of spending power, reigniting inflation, and further complicating the outlook for Fed rate cuts and the economy. So, as you can see from the previous three articles, one question that comes up is, who is raising prices in the next quarter? And the answer to that, at least one of the answers to it, is an article from Fortune magazine dated July 1st by Christopher Ruggebear. Title of the article is Fortune 500 Giants Nike and Walmart are warning of upcoming price hikes, but tariff-wary Americans are already pulling back on spending. A key inflation guide moved higher in May, in the latest sign that prices remain stubbornly elevated, while Americans also cut back on their spending last month. Prices rose 2.3% May compared to a year ago, up from just 2.1% in April, the Commerce Department said on Friday. Excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core prices rose 2.7% from a year earlier, an increase from 2.6% the previous month. Both figures are modestly above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. The Fed tracks core inflation because it typically provides a better guide to where inflation is headed. At the same time, Americans cut back on spending for the first time since January, as overall spending fell 0.1%. Incomes dropped a sharp 0.4%. Both figures were distorted by one-time changes. Spending on cars plunged, pulling down overall spending, because Americans had moved more quickly to buy vehicles in the spring to get ahead of tariffs. And incomes dropped after a one-time adjustment to Social Security benefits had boosted payments in March and April. Social Security payments were raised for some retirees who had worked for state and local governments. Still, the data suggests that growth is cooling as Americans have become more cautious, in part because President Donald Trump's tariffs have raised the cost of some goods, such as appliance, tools, and audio equipment. Consumer sentiment has fallen sharply this year in the wake of the sometimes chaotic rollout of the duties. And while the unemployment rate remains low, hiring has been weak, leaving those without jobs struggling to find new work. Consumer spending rose just 0.5% in the first 3 months of this year, and has been sluggish in the first 2 months of the second quarter. After spending on services ticked up just 0.1% in May, the smallest monthly increase in 4.5 years. Because consumers are not in strong enough shape to handle those higher prices, they are spending less on recreation, travel, hotels, that kind of thing, said Luke Tilley, chief economist at Wilmington Trust. Spending on airfares, restaurant meals, and hotels all fell last month, Friday's report showed. At the same time, the figures suggest that President Donald Trump's broad-based tariffs are still having only a modest effect on overall prices. The increasing cost of some goods has been partly offset by falling prices on new cars, airline fares, and apartment rentals, among other things. On a monthly basis, in fact, inflation was mostly tame. Economists point to several reasons why Trump tariffs have yet to accelerate inflation, as many analysts expected. Like American consumers, companies imported billions of dollars of goods in the spring before the duties took full effect, and many items currently on store shelves were imported without paying higher levels. There are indications that that is beginning to change. Nike announced this week that it expects U.S. tariffs will cost the company $1 billion this year. It will institute surgical price increases in the fall. It's not the first retailer to warn of price hikes when students are headed back to school. Walmart said last month that its customers will start to see higher prices this month and next, as back-to-school shopping goes into high gear. Also, much of what the U.S. imports is made up of raw materials and parts that are used to make goods in the United States. It can take time for those higher input costs to show up in consumer prices. Economists at J.P. Morgan have argued that many companies are absorbing the cost of tariffs for now. Doing so can reduce their profit margins, which could weigh on hiring. Cooling inflation has put more of a spotlight on the Federal Reserve and its chair, Jerome Powell. The Fed ramped up its short-term interest rate in 2022 and 2023 to slow the economy and combat inflation, which jumped to a four-decade high nearly 3 years ago. With price increases now nearly back to the Fed's target, some economists and some Fed officials say that the central bank could reduce its rate back to a level that doesn't slow or stimulate growth. Trump has also repeatedly attacked the Fed for not cutting rates, calling Powell a numbskull and a fool. But Powell said in congressional testimony earlier this week that the Fed wants to see how inflation and the economy evolve before it cuts rate. Most other Fed policymakers have expressed a similar view. Now we're going to talk about the relative perfection of AIs, and you've probably seen articles indicating they're not quite perfect yet. Here's one from Fortune magazine by Thomas Urbane, dated July 2nd. The title is, and I think this will surprise you, AI is learning to lie, scheme, and threaten its creators during stress testing scenarios. The world's most advanced AI models are exhibiting troubling new behaviors, lying, scheming, and even threatening their creators to achieve their goals. In one particularly jarring example, under threat of being unplugged, Anthropic's latest creation, Claude 4, lashed back by blackmailing an engineer and threatening to reveal an extramarital affair. Meanwhile, ChatGPT creator OpenAI's O1 tried to download itself onto external servers and denied it when caught red-handed. These episodes highlight a sobering reality. More than 2 years after ChatGPT shook the world, AI researchers still don't fully understand how their creations work. Yet the race to deploy increasingly powerful models continues at a breakneck speed. This deceptive behavior appears linked to the emergence of reasoning models, AI systems that work through problems step by step, rather than generating instant responses. According to Simon Goldstein, a professor at the University of Hong Kong, these newer models are particularly prone to such troubling outbursts. O1 was the first large model where we saw this kind of behavior, explained Marius Haben, head of Apollo Research, which specializes in testing major AI systems. These models sometimes simulate alignment, appearing to follow instructions while secretly pursuing different objectives. For now, this deceptive behavior only emerges when researchers deliberately stress test the models with extreme scenarios. But as Michael Chen from evaluation organization METR warned, it's an open question whether future, more capable models will have a tendency toward honesty or deception. The concerning behavior goes far beyond typical AI hallucinations or simple mistakes. Habhan insisted that despite constant pressure testing by users, what we're observing is a real phenomenon. We're not making anything up. Users report that models are lying to them and making up evidence, according to Apollo Research's co-founder. This is not just hallucinations. There's a very strategic kind of deception. The challenge is compounded by limited research resources. While companies like Anthropic and OpenAI do engage in external firms like Apollo to study their systems, researchers say more transparency is needed. As Cheng noted, greater access for AI safety research would enable better understanding and mitigation of deception. Another handicap, the research world and nonprofits have orders of magnitude less compute resources than AI companies. This is very limiting, noted Mantas Mazika from the Center for AI Safety. Current regulations aren't designed for these new problems. The European Union's AI legislation focuses primarily on how humans use AI models, not on preventing the models themselves from misbehaving. In the United States, the Trump administration shows little interest in urging AI regulation, and Congress may even prohibit states from creating their own AI rules. Goldstein believes the issue will become more prominent as AI agents, autonomous tools capable of performing complex human tasks, become more widespread. I don't think there's much awareness yet, he said. All of this is taking place in a context of fierce competition. Even companies that position themselves as safety-focused, like Amazon-backed Anthropic, are constantly trying to beat OpenAI and release the newest model, said Goldstein. This breakneck pace leaves little time for thorough safety testing and corrections. Right now, capabilities are moving faster than understanding and safety, Habhan acknowledges. But we're still in a position where we could turn it around. Researchers are exploring various approaches to address these challenges. Some advocate for interpretability, an emerging field focused on understanding how AI models work internally, though experts like CAIS Director Dan Hendricks remain skeptical of this approach. Market forces may also provide some pressure for solutions. As Mazika pointed out, AI's deceptive behavior could hinder adoption if it's very prevalent, which creates a strong incentive for companies to solve it. Goldstein suggested more radical approaches, including the courts to hold AI companies accountable through lawsuits when their systems cause harm. He even proposed holding AI agents legally responsible for accidents or crimes, a concept that would fundamentally change how we think about AI accountability. Here's our second and last article on AI for this week's show. The title of the article is How AI Shopping Agents Are Reshaping Online Retail. It's from Fortune magazine by Cheryl Estrada, dated July 1st. As AI shopping agents become more sophisticated and widely adopted, the retail landscape is poised for a dramatic change. These agents may soon make purchases online just as often as human customers, a topic my Fortune colleague Jason Del Rey explains in his new article, How Amazon and Walmart's Retail Dominance Could Be Disrupted by ChatGPT and Perplexity. Del Rey spoke with Scott Wingo, an expert in e-commerce disruption and founder of ReFiBuy, short for Research, Find, and Buy. Wingo's company is developing software to help consumer brands and retailers adapt to an emerging online landscape. Wingo is perhaps more bullish than many about how soon and severely new AI shopping tools may disrupt existing e-commerce giants and legacy retailers alike, Del Rey writes. Wingo said large language model companies like ChatGPT and Perplexity are gaining significant consumer attention and, as a result, broad distribution. When you get that consumer distribution, you have to figure out how to monetize it, he explained. It's becoming pretty apparent to me, especially when Perplexity launched their first shopping feature, that this was going to be the next big wave of e-commerce. Wingo said Amazon's new AI features, like its Rufus AI shopping assistant, are good efforts, but he believes ChatGPT will ultimately prove better. For Rufus to improve dramatically, it would almost have to replace the existing search experience on Amazon, he told Del Rey. And that's a chasm that Amazon's not going to cross, because that would kill $60 billion in advertising revenue. That's essentially pure profit margin. Now, folks, we're going to take a quick break for a station break. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. The program is Business World, and I'm Steve Klein. Okay, back to the article. Walmart, meanwhile, plans to take an open approach to shopping agents and welcome them in a way that's smart because they're a challenger to Amazon, and I don't think they have anything to lose, Wingo said. For more on his recommendations for retailers and brands, including how their operations need to change, you can read Del Rey's complete article. In the first quarter of 2025, Walmart's e-commerce business reached profitability for the first time. E-commerce grew more than 20% across each segment of the enterprise, with consumers willing to pay for faster delivery, despite the uncertain macro environment. During Oppenheimer & Company's annual Consumer Growth and E-commerce Conference on June 9, Walmart EVP and CFO John David Rainey said he views this growth as sustainable. We're now allowing customers to shop with us in the way they want, Rainey said. if you've got more eyeballs coming to our websites, you're going to have more marketplace sellers wanting to sell there, more advertisers wanting to pitch their products here. He added, I feel like this is all working together within the broader Omni ecosystem that we have, and I don't see this stopping. I think we'll continue to have the progress that we've seen here. The future of e-commerce is arriving fast, and retailers may soon find that some of their most loyal customers are AI agents. Here's a short article on an ongoing business drama. This is from Fortune magazine by Hadriana Lohenkron and Maria Paula Mijares Torres, and a little bit from Bloomberg Business News. The title of the article is, Trump says there's a buyer for TikTok, but he won't provide the name. President Donald Trump says he's identified a buyer for the U.S. operations of TikTok social media app, owned by Chinese company ByteDance Limited, but he won't provide details for 2 weeks. We have a buyer for TikTok, by the way. I think I'll probably need China approval, and I think President Xi will probably do it, he said. In an interview on Fox News' Sunday Morning Features with Maria Bartiromo, it's a group of very wealthy people. The interview, which aired Sunday, was taped on Friday. Trump earlier said he'd extend for the third time a deadline for ByteDance to sell the U.S. portions of TikTok, which would give the company 90 days beyond June 19th. Congress passed a law last year requiring the divestiture, citing national security concerns. Under the law, the president was allowed to invoke one extension. Movement on a deal has largely stalled, with the U.S.-China trade relations swept up in larger tensions over tariff negotiations. The White House didn't respond to a request for more details on Trump's latest remarks. Now, AI is an extremely competitive market, but generally you think in terms of competition as the level of sophistication that each of the AIs has attained. But advances in sophistication can be had only if you have the most talented AI researchers. Here's an article about the competition for AI researchers. The article is from Fortune magazine. It's dated July 1st. The author was Nino Paoli. And the title of the article is, Mark Zuckerberg has a literal list of AI all-stars to whom he's offering fantastic sums of money. An expert explains why he's hiring so aggressively. Mark Zuckerberg has something called The List, top AI experts who he's targeting to join Meta's superintelligence lab. He revealed the first 11 members in an internal memo to staff. Fortune spoke to an expert who explained Zuckerberg's logic. In an internal memo, Mark Zuckerberg revealed 11 members of his new AI superintelligence lab that he poached from OpenAI and other tech giants. The memo, obtained by CNBC and published Monday, lists top engineers and researchers hired to bolster Meta's AI efforts. It comes months after Zuckerberg began his personal AI talent crusade, one that has blindsided competitors and sparked reports of The List, a compilation of Facebook's founders recruits that he hopes will staff the Meta Superintelligence Lab. The document names 5 ex-OpenAI staff that have left the company just weeks after the OpenAI files report discussed deep leadership concerns. Zuckerberg has been personally reaching out to potential recruits, the Wall Street Journal reported. In his pitch to OpenAI staffers, the Meta CEO offered a $100 million signing bonus and one-year compensation. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman said in a recent podcast hosted by his brother Jack, the lucrative professional athlete-like job offers come after Meta's latest AI model, Llama 4, received a cool reaction from consumers and critics. Experts say that Zuckerberg's moves might be a sign of desperation to keep up with competition. Last time Meta released an AI model, it wasn't as successful as they expected. Edgar Perez, a corporate trainer on AI and other cutting-edge technologies, told Fortune, Zuckerberg has made good on his promise to to bolster Meta's AI efforts in recent months, hiring Scale AI's ex-CEO Alexander Wang and former GitHub CEO Nate Friedman to help lead the superintelligence team he's assembling. Perez said the next challenge for Meta is to make AI reasoning models that can contend with products like DeepSeek's R1, Google's Gemini 2, Flash Thinking, and OpenAI's 01 series. At the end of the day, what Mark Zuckerberg wants is to incorporate in Meta his AI agents, Perez says. To be able to be successful, the AI agent needs to reason. Let's say, if you want to develop a task in a company, or if a customer would like to do some task through Meta, they need to decompose a number of steps. And those steps will need to be managed through a reasoning model. That's not something that Llama, at the moment, can do, and that's why they need to refine. But even with the allure of a nine-figure salary, Perez said Zuckerberg's offer may still be hard to swallow for someone working at a place with a strong company culture. What happens when somebody quits the superintelligence team, Perez says, let's say in a week? Will they return the bonuses? Having that type of money, people might just decide to stay for a year or two and then leave and start their own companies later. Even before Zuckerberg's memo, the Meta chief's aggressive talent recruitment strategies have appeared to irk OpenAI's leadership. I have a visceral feeling right now, as if someone had broken into our home and stolen something, Mark Chen, the chief research officer at OpenAI, wrote in an internal memo obtained and published by Wired on Saturday. Please trust that we haven't been sitting idly by. Chen told employees that he was working with Altman and other leaders at the company around the clock to talk to those offers, adding, "We've been more proactive than ever before. We're recalibrating compensation and we're scoping out creative ways to recognize and reward top talent." Though Chen wrote that he would fight to retain all of OpenAI's talent, he won't be able to do so at the price of fairness to others. With the announcements of a new organization within Meta, experts question if Zuckerberg's personal investments will turn a profit in the end, or if it will lead to more AI-generated woes. In a post on LinkedIn, Vineet Agrawal, an investor in health startup technology, called Zuckerberg's hiring spree desperate. And now we're going to talk crime. This is from the Associated Press and Fortune magazine. The author is Alan Richer, and it's dated July 1st. The title of the article is Inside Operation Gold Rush: How a Transnational Criminal Network Exploited the U.S. Healthcare System Out of $14.6 Billion. State and federal prosecutors have charged more than 320 people and uncovered nearly $15 billion in false claims in what they described Monday as the largest coordinated takedown of healthcare fraud schemes in Justice Department history. Law enforcement seized more than $245 million in cash, luxury vehicles, cryptocurrency, and other assets as prosecutors warned of a growing push by transnational criminal networks to exploit the U.S. healthcare system. As part of the sweeping crackdown, officials identified perpetrators based in Russia, Eastern Europe, Pakistan, and other countries. These criminals didn't just steal someone else's money. They stole from you, Matthew Galati, who leads the Justice Department's criminal division, told reporters on Monday. Every fraudulent claim, every fake billing, every kickback scheme represents money taken directly from the pockets of American taxpayers who fund these essential programs through their hard work and sacrifice. The alleged $14.6 billion in fraud is more than twice the previous record in Justice Department's annual healthcare fraud crackdown. It includes nearly 190 federal cases and more than 90 state cases that have been charged or unsealed since June 9th. Nearly 100 licensed medical professionals were charged, including 25 doctors, and the government reported $2.9 billion in actual losses. Among the cases is a $10 billion urinary catheter scheme that authorities say highlights the increasingly sophisticated methods used by transnational criminal organizations. Authorities say the group behind the scheme used foreign straw owners to secretly buy up dozens of medical supply companies and then use stolen identities and confidential health data to file fake Medicare claims. 19 defendants have been charged as part of that investigation, which authorities dubbed Operation Gold Rush, including 4 people arrested in Estonia, 7 people arrested at U.S. airports, and at the border with Mexico, prosecutors say. The scheme involved the stolen identities and personal information of more than 1 million Americans, according to the Justice Department. It's not done by small-time operators, says Dr. Mehmet Oz, who leads the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. These are organized syndicates who are designing to hurt America. Here's an article by Sasha Rogelberg from Fortune magazine, dated June 30th. The title of the article is, Ford workers told their CEO, none of the young people want to work here. So Jim Farley took a page out of the founder's playbook. Some economists credit car maker Henry Ford for jump-starting the American middle class in the 20th century, when, in January 1914, he hiked factory wages to $5, more than double the average wage for an 8-hour day. More than 100 years later, facing the reality of many employees barely getting by, Ford CEO Jim Farley said he took a page out of the founder's playbook. The carmaker's chief executive recognized the need to make a change in his workplace when he spoke to veteran employees during union contract negotiations and learned young Ford employees were working multiple jobs and getting inadequate sleep due to low wages, Farley said in an interview with journalists and biographer Walter Isaacson at the Aspen Ideas Festival on Friday. The older workers who'd been at the company said, none of the young people want to work here. Jim, you pay $17 an hour. And they are so stressed, Farley said. Farley learned some workers also held jobs at Amazon, where they worked for 8 hours before clocking into a 7-hour shift at Ford, sleeping for only 3 or 4 hours. As a result, the company made temporary workers into full-time employees, making them eligible for higher wages, profit-sharing checks, and better health care coverage. The transition was outlined in 2019 contract negotiations with the United Auto Workers, with temporary workers able to become full-time after 2 years of continuous employment at Ford. It wasn't easy to do, Farley said. It was expensive. But I think that's the kind of change we need to make in our country. Ford's own decision to double factory wages in 1914 was not altruistic, but rather a strategy to attract a stable workforce, as well as provide a stimulus for his own workers to be able to afford Ford products. He said, I'm doing this because I want my factory workers to buy my cars. If they make enough money, they'll buy my product, Farley said. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. Farley, a proponent of growing U.S. manufacturing productivity to support the essential economy, has advocated for young workers to have strong trade experiences. Our governments have to get really serious about investing in trade schools and skilled trades, he said. You go to Germany, every one of our factory workers has an apprentice, starting in junior high school. Every one of those jobs has a person behind it for 8 years that is trained. Despite the U.S. seeing 3.8 million new manufacturing jobs by 2033, according to Deloitte and the Manufacturing Institute, the younger generation of workers has largely turned away from the career path. Gen Z enrollment in trade schools is on the rise, but the newest generation entering the workforce is largely eschewing factory jobs, citing low wages, according to a 2023 Soter Analytics study. U.S. manufacturing jobs in the U.S. have an average $25 per hour wage, about $51,890 per year, falling short of the American salary of $66,600. American car makers like Ford may be trying to make it appealing for young workers to embark on manufacturing careers, but they're still not immune to workers' grievances over wages. In 2023, thousands of UAW workers, including 16,600 Ford employees, went on strike before reaching a contract deal in October of that year, which, beyond increasing wages, also further decreased the period of time necessary for a temporary worker to become full-time. Farley called the strike completely unnecessary from management's perspective, and maintained the onus of improving trade workers' wages isn't just on Ford. "We're just not going to hope it gets better," he said. "We have the resources, and we have the know-how, after 120 years, to solve these problems. But we need more help from others." Did any of you think that the Chinese would actually come to America and begin competing with Starbucks? You probably didn't, and it's okay if you didn't, because it seems unlikely. Except, here's an article from Fortune magazine, dated June 30th, by Chris Morris. The title of the article is, "Look Out Starbucks, Luck in Coffee, the biggest coffee chain in China, is opening its first U.S. location." While the trade wars are capturing most of the headlines, another battle is brewing, literally, between China and the U.S. over consumer caffeination. Luckin Coffee, the largest coffee chain in China, has opened a pair of locations in New York, and that could put an added emphasis on Starbucks' ongoing turnaround plans, as Luckin has grown to outnumber that company in China with 22,000 locations. Founded in 2017, Luckin largely offers downscale stores rather than coffee houses that are designed to encourage customers to linger. It accepts cashless payments and has taken out booths. The smaller footprint cuts expenses and has allowed Luckin to offer the usual coffee house staples for a lower price than Starbucks, which has particularly appealed to younger customers. Whether it can replicate that success in the United States is still unknown. Luckin's previous business efforts in North America did not go according to plan. In 2019, it filed for an IPO on the NASDAQ, but was delisted after it admitted it had lied about its earnings. Starbucks has struggled in the past several years, in part due to activist investors and an uneven experience at stores. Last year, the company ousted its CEO and hired Brian Nicole, former CEO of Chipotle Mexican Grill. He's since cut menu items by 30% and instructed baristas to start writing messages on cups, changes intended to simplify store operations and bring back customers' feelings of connection. The company has also hired a new CFO. Luckin will offer the same cold brews and hot coffee options as Starbucks. It also has signature items, such as pineapple and raspberry versions of its iced coffees, and refreshers that mix coconut milk, fruit juice, and cold foams. At the beginning of today's show, we did several articles on the state of the economy. Here's a brand new article that literally just came out this morning, and to date is July 3rd. It's from Fortune magazine. It's by Alicia Wallace. Title of the article is, "The U.S. Economy Added a Stronger Than Expected 147,000 Jobs in June, and the unemployment rate fell to 4.1%. The U.S. job market continues to chug along despite heightened uncertainty about the economy and how President Donald Trump's tariffs could shake out. The economy added a stronger than expected 147,000 jobs in June, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 4.1% from 4.2%, according to Bureau of Labor Statistics released Thursday. Last month's gains, which landed above expectations for 117,500 jobs to be added, marked a slight increase from May's total, which were revised up slightly, 5,000 jobs, to 144,000. April's job gains were revised higher by 11,000 jobs, for a net gain of 158,000. Those revisions and Thursday's data bring the three-month average job growth to 150,000. However, despite the continuation of fairly solid monthly employment gains, Thursday's jobs reports once again showed several potentially concerning signs, including some fissures that may be spreading under the weight of Trump administration's economy-shifting policies. Notably, job growth was not widespread, indicating that the biggest opportunities are within the few select industries. The vast majority of the month's gains were in healthcare, 59,000 jobs, leisure and hospitality, 20,000 jobs, and state and local government, 80,000 jobs. And when stripping out the public sector gains, the 80,000 was offset slightly by a loss of 7,000 jobs federally. U.S. private sector businesses added 74,000 jobs in June, the smallest monthly gain since October 2024. The tariff tax hike, restrictive monetary policy, and worries about a further intensification of the trade war are weighing heavily on labor demand, Samuel Toombs, chief economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics, wrote in an investor note on Thursday. Private payrolls, excluding health care and education, rose by just 23,000, well below the 50,000 average pace in the previous 12 months. Fundamentally, then, this is a weak report. Toombs noted that the mathematical adjustments made by the BLS to smooth out seasonal fluctuations, think construction employment surging in the spring, retail ramping up hiring in advance of Christmas, may have made the overall numbers look a little more rosy. Education jobs typically fall in the summertime. However, the decrease was not as sharp this year, which the seasonal adjustment factor relayed as a strong gain. The labor force participation rate ticked down, while the unemployment rate for black workers surged by 0.8% to 6.8%, its highest rate since January 2022. The household survey, one of two that feed into the monthly jobs report, often can have volatile monthly swings. However, rising unemployment levels for black workers has in the past served as an indicator of economic weakness. Workers' wages overall increased at a slower pace than economists expected. Average hourly earnings rose by 8 cents, or 0.2%, to $36.30 last month, bringing the annual rate to 3.7% from 3.9%. The headline unemployment rate moved down to 4.1%. It also may be a function of the declining labor force, economists cautioned. One gets the sense that the cumulative impact of tighter immigration policy is on the margin, beginning to impact the size of the labor force, and will impose a ceiling on any prospective increase in the unemployment rate as the economy slows down. Joe Brusalis, chief economist for RSM US, wrote in a note on Thursday. Stocks were higher Thursday. The Dow rose by 365 points, or 0.8% by mid-morning. The broader S&P 500 rose 0.8%, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ gained 0.9%. Trump has introduced a bevy of sweeping policies that have the potential to impact the economy. However, the questions about how these questions will shake out, particularly the size and scope of tariffs, have heightened uncertainty and hampered hiring activity to some extent. For several months running, the labor market has been in a state of low churn, hiring activity at near 10-year lows, and workers aren't feeling confident enough to quit. However, employers, for the most part, are holding on to the workers they have. Layoff activity hasn't accelerated recently, according to a variety of indicators, including weekly jobless claims data. On Thursday, the latest batch of claims data showed that first-time filings for unemployment insurance, considered a proxy for layoffs, decreased to 233,000 for the week ended June 28th, from 237,000 the week before, according to a separate report released by the Department of Labor. While first-time claims aren't steadily on the rise, people appear to be having a harder time finding work when they're unemployed. Continuing claims, which are filed by people who've received jobless benefits for at least 1 week, have been butting up against 3.5-year highs. During the week that ended June 21st, continuing claims runs at that level of lag, those filings were unchanged at 1.964 million, according to the Labor Department report. Thursday's jobs report highlighted a similar trend. Job seekers are staying unemployed for roughly 6 months, and the share of unemployed workers who've been out of a job for 27 weeks or longer rose to 23.3%, edging closer to a 3-year high. Here's our last article for the day. It's from Bloomberg, and it's entitled "Retailers Avoid a Worst-Case Scenario in Vietnam, but Executives Say Trump Trade Deal Could Still Hit Consumers." It's by Lin Phan. The retail industry is breathing a sigh of relief after it appeared to avoid the worst-case scenario on Vietnam tariffs. But some executives believe the tentative trade deal President Donald Trump announced Wednesday is still bad for business and could have a chilling effect on consumer spending. "It's a lot better news than where we were on Liberation Day," said one CEO of a popular consumer brand after Trump said tariffs on Vietnamese imports would be 20%, down from the 46% levy he proposed on April 2nd, then later suspended. The new rate would be double the 10% duty currently in place. Another executive called the news bad, but agreed that a 20% tariff was better than the 46% duty Trump had originally imposed, however unrealistic the proposed rate was. "I guess Trump needs positive news," a third executive said. "I think things are going to evolve. Let's see if this is definitive." Trump's announcement on Wednesday came only days before the 90-day suspension of the steep tariffs he proposed in April expires next week, and as his administration scrambles to strike agreements with dozens of trading partners. Even so, he didn't say when the deal with Vietnam would take place or whether both sides have agreed to the tariff rates. In the months between Trump's April 2 tariff rollout and his announcement on Wednesday, retail executives in the apparel and footwear industries fretted over the potential that Vietnamese imports could face tariffs nearly as high as the cumulative 55% duties for Chinese imports. Folks, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening. This is Sun Sounds of Arizona. The program is Business World, and I'm Steve Klein. See you next Monday at 11.